Hello and welcome to FYI. This is Plant-Based OKC today.
In the house.
We are here. I am Andrea Conway, and this is my husband, Jimmy Conway.
Hello, everyone.
And our good friend and plant-based evangelist, Randy Titone.
I mean, it's Easter. We're back.
Jesus is back, and we're back. It's just not the same without you here.
Well,
Randy. Last time we had to cover.
I understand.
You were off playing somewhere, weren't you?
No, I was not. I hate to bring it up. My dear mother passed away.
Yes.
Yes. I guess that wasn't playing.
No.
Yeah, and I think we did mention that on the air. So we missed you, and we're glad to have you back. We actually were gone last month.
That's right.
So now we're, I feel like we've been gone forever.
You've totally forgot about it.
Actually, I did, yes. Well, but we're back on
track. We were going to try and cover it up, but I guess not.
The cat's out of the bag.
We like to try and make it here every month that we can. The fourth Tuesday of the month on FYI, and we're here to elevate your thinking. If you don't know who we are, Plant-Based OKC, you can find us on the Google. On internet, you can Google Plant-Based OKC, and you'll find our website. And it tells a little bit there about who we are and our mission and what we do. And then it gives, under another tab called Wellness Events, you can see where we're going to be and what we're doing. And we have monthly seminars that teach what we're going to talk about today, and that is nutrition through a plant-based lifestyle that can prevent and reverse most chronic diseases that we're faced with today. And those monthly seminars are free of charge. The only requirement is that you have a reservation for them. Our next one is coming up this Saturday, April 27th. And you can, they still have a few openings, so if you're interested, you can go to plantbasedokc.com and submit a reservation for that seminar. We hold these once a month, though, and the dates for the rest of the year have been posted on the website because there are a couple months we're going to be out of town, so I've lined them up for the whole year, and they are on there, and you can just pick which date you'd like to attend and send me a reservation for that day. These are on a Saturday starting at noon, and they last about 3 hours. By the time we take an in-depth look at what goes on in your body when you consume a whole food plant-based lifestyle. And why we got into this is on the website as well, and there's a couple videos on there. And then our previous radio shows, there are links to the recording of all of our radio shows in the past, and so you can pull those up and listen to the different ones we've had over the last couple years. And then we also hold a support group meeting on the first Monday of every month. So coming up May 6th, I believe, is the first Monday in May. We will be at Rococo Restaurant in North Park Mall. It's free to attend the meeting, but Rococo does provide us a plant-based menu, and if you choose to purchase a meal from them, then you can. But we are there just to, that's more informal than our seminar, and we're there to kind of do what we do today on this show and just discuss different topics and take questions from the audience about what they might be struggling with or various topics that have questions about. And so we're there about an hour and a half on Monday, first Monday of every month. So you're welcome to join us for that. And then, of course, we do our radio show.
That seems like a lot.
We're popular. Yes, it is. Wow. And in fact, we do other things as well, like Tulsa is hosting their first Veg Fest coming up in May. And so Saturday, May 4th in Tulsa, we will be there, and my husband will be speaking to the audience about heart disease and the cause and what you can do to prevent and reverse it. And there's going to be a lot of other good speakers there that day. Lots of great information from vendors being passed out. Lots of good plant-based food options there. So if you're wanting to get out to Tulsa to check that out, that'd be great. We'll have one in Oklahoma coming up this fall in September, I believe. And that'll all be posted on our website. Or you can follow the VegFest OKC, I believe, on Facebook to find more information on that as that starts to come along as well. But I just thought we'd kind of take it back to the basics today, and I was just going to do an Ask the Doctor.
We're going to Luckenbach?
Yeah.
That's right.
What?
Well, since we're going to take it back to basics.
Are you going to bust out that song for us?
Well, I can.
That's
you
right.
Everything brings us back to a song lyric.
That's it right. does. I live my life
through songs.
Through songs.
That's right.
Yes. So are you going to sing or are we moving on?
If the spirit moves him, he will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just let me know.
Yeah. You can't pressure that sort of thing.
That's right. Okay, so going to get back to the basics. I got a number for you.
Okay.
50,000. You know what that is?
Just 50,000.
What number that
represents?
Correlates with?
Mm-mm.
Oh. I went to Amazon and I typed in diet books.
Oh, wow.
Over 60,000 results.
Yeah, because it's all about losing weight is the problem.
Well, our new personal best friend, Gundry, has come up with a new book, too.
Oh, that came out?
Yes. If you guys don't know about him, he's written a book called The Plant Paradox, which is full of fantasy, really. I mean,
misinformation.
He quotes scientific studies, but none of the studies he quotes actually backs up his position. So it's very confusing, and I think he's guilty of mass malpractice with the untruths that he spreads about how plants are unhealthy because they contain this protein called a lectin. Lectins are in a lot of plant food. And, you know, they're very high in beans, but the thing is, cooking changes the lectin. Heat transforms proteins.
Well, surely his new book isn't going to be all about that again.
It is...
2.0.
Reportedly, yes, it is. Mm. And how, you know, you can't eat these foods unless you take his supplements. And then the lectins are okay.
What's so funny as you pull this up and scroll down, there's stuff, you know, Mediterranean diet, the new Atkins diet. Here's one. Just tell me what to do. Living the ketogenic lifestyle to lose weight. Chasing diets. Stop the endless search and discover the solution. It took 60,000 books to come up with that one, right?
Well, the problem is, as we all know, going on a diet just does not work.
Nope.
It's not sustainable. No one ever does it long term.
If you're talking about deprivation, that is not sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable. And I think, I mean, that's why, like, I mean, I can testify I became a lifetime member of Weight Watchers. I mean, I was great at going on Weight Watchers and following their plan, and I would lose the weight I needed to lose. And then when you got to the end, I didn't know how to transition that into my real life and go about maintaining that weight loss for any significant period of time. So, of course, over the next year or two, I would put back on all the weight that I, you know, had lost in that previous 6 months or however long it would take me to lose the weight. And it just kept, I mean, that's just how I lived life, just back and forth and back and forth and up and down. And, you know, it was just that, you know, Weight Watchers was my thing. And there's a million of them out there that do that. And is there still some that you actually buy your meals from them?
Nutrisystem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem with that is, too,
it's expensive.
It's expensive. You're not going to surely order your food online and eat that for the rest of your life.
Nope.
And it's just, again, that's just not sustainable. I find that people that do those, I feel like the people that I know that do the ketogenic diet end up, they always have to have a cheat day because what they're doing
isn't sustainable.
Isn't sustainable. And your body goes crazy when it doesn't get any, you know, carbohydrates of any kind. And So they have to have a cheat day, or they do it for a while and then they end up going off of it and then they go back on it. And I don't know. I feel like for the first time in my life, well, it's been 10 years now that we started a whole food plant-based diet. It was something that I found to be very sustainable. I never feel like I'm missing out or need something, and I've been able to maintain my weight now. I mean, it took me a couple years to really get the hang of what we were doing. And at first, I didn't get the concept of whole plant foods. And I do what a lot of people do when they start. I ate lots of bread and pasta and things that are refined carbs, that are more calorically dense. A lot of faux meats because I didn't know how to prepare my own stuff and what to do. And I was still eating things like French fries because that was a plant, right?
Yes, of course.
And potato chips. I mean, I just, you know, it took me a while to grasp the understanding of what a true, not a vegan diet, but a whole food plant-based diet really was. And it wasn't, I was just looking for products that didn't have animal-based products in them at the time. And so, yeah, I was eating Fritos and things like that. And once I realized that that's not really what this is about and sort of tweaked everything and really focused on whole plant foods, I've been able to maintain my body weight without even really much thought to it. I mean, I do know my body now, and if I eat, you know, tons of bread for whatever reason, if we're doing a lot of traveling and I'm getting a lot of extra breads and stuff that I don't normally eat, then yeah, I can put on a couple pounds. But for the most part, I feel like this is a very sustainable lifestyle, not just a diet, and sustainable lifestyle. And so now, and the more we've done, not only realizing that you can maintain your weight, but then it's really about more than that. And I think that's what ultimately for me makes it sustainable, because I know what I'm doing for my health, not just for the physical aspect of maintaining my weight.
Right. It becomes self-propagating because, one, you start feeling better.
Yes.
And if you slip up and you have something that maybe has some too much oil in it, you feel your body's reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel the inflammation. You know, I had undiagnosed gout for, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 years when we started this, which is a lot better controlled now that I know that I actually had the gout.
Right. And that was just from years. I mean, you probably are genetically predispositioned to have gout because your dad had it really bad.
Correct.
And, you know, over the years of you consuming, you know, the standard American diet, I think you built up that uric acid in your foot.
Oh, yes. I mean, it wasn't just standard American diet. I was OD'd on it. Because
we're fixing to bring up the Sonic footlong cheese coney.
I wasn't going to go there, but I could if you want.
I mean, it's about time.
That used to be my comfort food.
Oh, I know. Me too.
With an order of tater tots, and you had to have mustard and onions on
it. Yeah, you did.
Well, and just think about it. You may have even truly had that as a snack. You probably had eaten lunch, and then later in the afternoon.
Oh, there's
no question
that wasn't.
3 o'clock, you were like, man, I need a snack. And
yeah.
How about a footlong cheese coney for a snack?
That's exactly right.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, now that I know something about how hunger works and how high-fat food feeds that, because it suppresses the hormone that's supposed to tell you that you're full. And so your appetite goes way up. And I had a really stout appetite. And I was afraid to be hungry because my physical reaction to hunger was something I wasn't aware of. But I was actually withdrawing because if I got really hungry, I'd start sweating. I'd develop a horrible headache. And I'd actually become nauseated and start vomiting. And to me, I thought that was hypoglycemia or some other hunger reaction. And when I really started studying hunger and realized that those aren't signs of hunger, they're not signs of hypoglycemia, they're signs of me withdrawing from my drug of choice, which was salt, sugar, and fat, and in large quantities.
Yeah, but I even find now that, you know, 90% of the time we have a very clean diet. We eat most of our food out of our house, and we don't have fat, sugar, and excessive amounts of salt in our diet. But when we travel and we eat out and we're having to eat, you know, even though we're eating plant-based, we're eating at restaurants, we're getting a lot more of all sugar, fat, salt, even in the correct vegetables that we're eating. I find that I'm hungry all the time.
Right.
And it's not like that when I'm at home. And it's amazing how just consuming that amount of fat, sugar, and salt can just rev up your system to want more, more, more.
And I'm always surprised at how they sneak sugar in everything.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it's everywhere. And so it's really difficult to eat out and be healthy.
Yeah. And then this is not to say that we don't ever eat out, but we try to limit the number of times a week that we eat out because we know we're going to get all that extra sugar, fat, and salt. And we know there are times of the year that we're going to travel and do things and have to eat that stuff. So we try to be as strict on that part as we can when we're at home.
Well, Esselstyn's of the mind that you don't have to eat it. You can actually starve. He has never felt my hunger response.
Well, I would have to differ with him on that as well. But, well, we're going to play Ask the Doctor today because this is just stuff that, you know, when anyone, one, finds out that we don't eat animal products, so meat, dairy,
cheese,
poultry, and, you know, anything with a mother or a face, when we don't eat, these are the questions that we get asked. And then these are the questions that, you know, when people, they've come to our seminar and maybe they're starting to go down this path and they have questions. These are a lot of the questions that I get asked from people. So I just thought maybe we'd touch base with some of those because maybe we haven't hit on these recently or some of you listening may have that question. So the first one that's always out of the box.
Where do you get your protein?
So, let's start there.
Well, you get your protein from the same source of all protein. So, all protein initially is made by plants. 100% of the protein in the universe is initially made by plants. It's the only organism that can take sunlight and CO2 and produce protein. When people are really asking the question, what they're asking is, well, plants don't have enough protein for you to live on, so where are you getting adequate supplies of protein? Everybody's afraid that they're not going to get enough protein, when in reality, if you eat a varied diet, you don't have to worry about protein because you're going to get all the protein that you will require. If your hair grows and your fingernails are growing, you are getting enough protein.
Well, I think that goes along. That was kind of my second question because, you know, we'll go through our whole entire 3-hour seminar and talk about what animal protein does and so on. And then inevitably, one of the things we'll get at the end from a question somebody has will come up to me and say, well, you know, I always track my protein. So how many, you know, grams of protein, how will I know if I'm getting the number of grams I need in a day?
I find that is a very prevalent concept. I wonder,
how do people even know, one, I can't even believe people spend that much time in counting and tracking how many protein grams they're getting in a day.
I think the public's been totally brainwashed about protein, and especially if they join a health club, because most of the guys in the fitness field tend to be lean more towards paleo. And so it's real important to count your grams of protein to them. The science says you don't need to worry about it.
And so trying to convince someone you don't need to count your protein, there's been no protein, I don't even know what a protein deficiency disease would be called.
Kwashiorkor.
It's something similar like
yeah, that. What he said. But I don't think there's ever been, I don't think there's been in the United States.
There's never been a documented
death or case of it, period.
Here's a little meme I have on my phone. It says, we've never treated a single patient with a protein deficiency, yet the majority of patients we see are suffering from heart disease, diabetes, and other chronic illnesses directly resulting from trying to get enough protein. That's Dr. Alana Polday and Matt Letterman from Forks Over Knives.
Yes. That's so true. It's so true.
And, like we've alluded to many times, if you live in the United States and unless you're homeless and, your calorie intake is extremely limited, you're not going to have a protein deficiency. And even people that are homeless and have a calorie deficiency typically are going to be eating animal protein anyway, because mm-hmm. they're going to be eating food from the dollar menu at, McDonald's or wherever. And so it's extremely difficult for those people as well.
So the next thing, if we don't eat protein from animals and we are getting protein from our food, a lot of that is from things like, say, beans. And people tell me, well, I can't eat carbs because they make me fat. And this is a high-carb diet.
It is a high-carb diet. Carbs do not make you fat.
And I just don't like the word carb. Carbs. I hate that word. I wish there was more words to distinguish, because people lump every food is
Pringles.
A carb, honestly. Right? I mean, every food has some amount of sugar in it to make it a carb. Correct or no?
Well not sugar. I'm going to say not sugar. They have complex carbs. Or different than when you say sugar.
Well,
that
I mean,
is,
okay, a carrot has natural sugars in it. So people that are on a high protein, low carb, they don't like to consume carrots because they're too sweet and have too much sugar in them.
I've never known anybody to get fat eating carrots.
No, I haven't either.
And you're not going to. And you're not going to get fat by eating complex carbs because your body doesn't store those complex carbs as fat.
I know, but I think the general public, to me, in my opinion anyway, lumps refined carbs and complex carbs all together. That's why I don't like the word carb. I wish there was a different word for what we are talking about.
Starch is the other word.
Starch versus a refined carb. Because nobody wants to eat a potato. That's the other thing they tell you. A potato instantly turns to sugar in your body, and you don't want a potato.
Part of that has to do with the concept of the glycemic index and the glycemic load. White potatoes have a higher glycemic index and glycemic load than like a sweet potato. And in the diabetes world, that makes a difference because they don't treat the cause of the diabetes, they treat the symptom, which is high blood sugar. When you treat the cause of the disease, you don't have to worry about consuming white potatoes. You don't have to worry about glycemic index or glycemic load. But that's from a whole different...
Yeah, I know, but it's just, I'm referring more to, I guess, the keto-paleo... Because so many, and I hate to keep harping on that, but that seems, even our natural grocers where I love to shop, everything in their whole entire store is now geared towards the ketogenic diet.
Right.
And so they really promote this whole, don't eat potatoes, don't eat fruit, don't eat grains, because all of that, all these carbs.
Because of carbs.
And I guess I don't understand. Is it that they supposedly are going to make you fat? Is that what the whole thing is
about?
Well,
if you eat carbs on a ketogenic diet, you won't go into ketosis.
And ketosis is what's causing them to lose weight?
Correct. They lose weight because they start burning their stores of fat.
But how do you do that long term?
You can't.
Well, I guess that's why they end up as...
The goal of the ketogenic diet is two things. To eat as much meat as you want and to lose weight. So, you know...
But you still have to eat fewer calories or expend more calories as in a workout. And true ketosis is not a state that can be... you can't be in it for a long period of time.
I mean, we put our body in ketosis when we do our five-day prolonged fast, basically, right?
Right, yes.
But we do it for 5 days, and then you're off of it and back to... Because it's not good.
You can't... It's not sustainable. You cannot live in ketosis. That's ketoacidosis. Your body's blood pH is so tightly controlled that you can't sustain that. And blood pH is very, very tightly controlled. So you got all these other systems that are just going like crazy to keep that acid down.
And who stands to benefit from the ketogenic diet? You're going to get sick. You're going to need more medication.
You're going to die quicker.
You're going to die quicker.
There's no question the science shows that eating that way, you die quicker. You have heart attacks.
Well,
more.
Just know, and I know you know this, but we'll need to kind of address it. I mean, I get told by people all the time that they start on a ketogenic diet and all their blood work numbers look good. Now, I say all their blood work numbers. That is their cholesterol drops and their sugars.
And the only way cholesterol is going to drop is that because you decrease your LDL. And you've lost weight. But as soon as you reach bottom in that diet, you have nowhere to go but up. And so those guys really ping pong a lot.
Well, and I think yo-yo. CRP is probably, the C-reactive protein is a number that's probably not measured a lot.
Well, just a white blood cell count. That's a marker of systemic inflammation. The higher your WBC count, the lower your life expectancy. And so, you know, something as simple as, you know, looking at your CBC, your white blood cell count, can be a marker that you can follow. And eating lots of animal fat, because, I mean, you get the saturated fat with the protein.
Right.
And so eating the saturated fat diet eventually will cause your LDL to go up. So initially it may drop, but eventually it's going to go up. It has no other direction it can go. Saturated fatty acids increase LDL, decrease HDL. And no matter what anybody has read recently about the LDL debate, there is actually, in the science, there's no debate that LDL causes heart disease. HDL doesn't. LDL is the causative agent, and it's the oxidized LDL, and most of our intake of oxidized LDL comes from eating animal flesh, because all animal flesh has oxidized LDL in it.
So when they tell us not to eat saturated fat, meaning like the government with their dietary guidelines.
Well, they have to veil it, because they can't say don't eat meat. So what they say is, don't eat saturated fat, eat lean meat. Well, you're still getting oxidized LDL in that lean meat. And the cholesterol in meat isn't in the actual fat part of it. It's in the flesh part of it.
It's crazy. Crazy.
It is very crazy, because those just so happen to be the crops that are subsidized. That's why you can go eat on the dollar menu.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, do okay in terms of calorie wise.
Right.
Because those foods are so heavily subsidized by our federal government. If they quit subsidizing that, and
you wouldn't have a $5 bag of burgers from Brahms. You'd have like a $25 bag of burgers.
And then people ask all the time, you know, why does this Impossible Burger cost so much? I go, it's real simple. Because it's not subsidized by the government like beef is.
Right.
I mean,
and I wouldn't call Impossible Burger a healthy food option, but it's a step in the right direction.
Sure.
Okay, the next question, and it goes a little bit along with this, is how will I know if I'm getting all the nutrients I need? And which it always cracks me up because I think, well, how do you know you're getting them
how
now?
How did you know?
You weren't worried when you were eating a pizza.
People weren't worried about it before, but the minute they're not going to eat
meat, which is protein,
right?
They want to know how they're going to get all the nutrients they need, and they need to track all this. They want to make it very complicated, and they want to track the number of carbs and track the number of grams of protein and track. I don't know what you're tracking. I mean, it's so much tracking, I can't keep it straight. I can't even imagine trying to worry about all that.
I can't either, and there's no reason to.
If you eat a varied whole food plant-based diet, which
you don't
is
even
pretty
have to
hard
be.
Not
don't even
to
have
do.
To be
no,
that
no, no.
Varied. If you eat beans and rice for every meal for the rest of your life, you're not going to have to worry about any nutrient. None.
I'll throw some salsa and some guac and or some... I mean, I probably eat as much guacamole as anybody that I know. More than I really care to admit. I mean, truly. And I'm just one of these guys that's sort of like, you know, people joke about beer and pizza or something.
You're the guac guy.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It can come from a package. You can take an avocado and some salsa and dump it together. It's all good to me. Yeah.
Okay, so now we know we're gonna get all the nutrients we need. Oh, except for one, and this is the other one.
Oh, here
get.
We go.
Yeah.
Oh, but
if
you can't get B12.
If I can't
this.
Get B12 from my diet, I'm not gonna consume a diet that's gonna require me to take a supplement.
Just how many dirt. Supplements? How many supplements are you taking now? Is what usually what I ask them.
Eat dirt if you don't want to take a supplement. The animals don't produce B12.
That's right.
It's a bacteria in the soil. So if you don't want to take a supplement, I'm serious. Eat some dirt. We used to eat a lot more dirt because our produce wasn't as clean as it is today. And so, you know, 50 years ago, eating vegetables, you probably got enough B12 because the vegetables were not that clean.
Yep.
Some are saying that our bodies actually can start its own B12 production. But it's in the intestines, and unless that gets reabsorbed and then gets into our saliva, we're probably not going to get the benefit of it. Because where B12 is actually really needed, besides in nerves, is in the stomach. And and so if it's made downstream, then it's not where it needs to be.
And just to make sure that anybody has a question about the B12, we take a methylcobalamin version of B12. There'll be, when you go to look for B12, you'll see ones that say cyanocobalamin and methylcobalamin. You want the methylcobalamin and some kind of sublingual version, something. It's not a pill you swallow. It's either going to be a liquid that you put a dropper under your tongue, or it's going to be a tablet that dissolves under your tongue, because you want to absorb it through the saliva in your mouth.
And as we've all come in contact with, people get so hung up on that even. And I say, if you go and you can't find the methyl, then get the cyano. Just get one, okay?
And because, well, and you don't need a ton of it, is
That's
the
right.
thing. You can take your B12 supplement. I take it maybe 3 times a week. And get plenty of what I need.
You probably really only need to take it a couple of times a year.
Yeah.
But
Colin Campbell, I think, in the China study said he takes like 20 micrograms a week. I mean, it was just nothing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and there's people like McDougal that say you got, you know, a year or so stored up.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I do think it'd take a while for you to go through those stores. That's why I don't think it's in, you know.
But it is important. And
it is
can
important
cause
to have it, yes.
Permanent nerve damage if you're truly hypo B12. If your B12 levels are so low where you have a B12 deficiency, I think you're going to notice some problems, though, because you're going to become anemic probably before you.
Oh, there's another one.
Yeah,
I don't get enough iron.
I don't get enough iron. How
well,
am
that,
I,
that
how
anemia
get...
has nothing to do with iron because it's got a B12. It's involved in absorption. So if you don't have the B12, you're not going to absorb. It doesn't matter how much iron you have. Now, that's plant
iron. Is
plant
another
iron.
Issue, yeah.
Heme iron, we absorb it whether we need it or not. And that's the issue with what makes heme iron bad.
And because you can have way too much iron.
Well, a lot of guys are what we call hemochromatosis, where their iron levels are so high that they're actually causing harm. And that's just from eating too much red meat.
So things like having like a really high iron level, I mean, is that something you're really going to know? Like if someone's in
hemochromatosis,
I mean, can you be that way for quite a while without really knowing
yes.
the damage it's doing to
yes,
your body?
Yes, you can. I mean, if you haven't had a hematocrit or an iron level done in, you know, 10 years, you probably ought to have it checked, especially if you're male and you've eaten a standard American diet. Women do not seem to have as much a problem because of monthly cycles.
I do talk to a lot of women that struggle with anemia.
Well, that can be an issue with women, but...
Well, and then you sort of go, I mean, do they really have a problem or do they just think they have a problem? Like, have they gone and had blood work done?
Yeah, I don't... No, I mean, I think every scenario is different.
Well, anytime somebody feels a little tired for a while, if they have a lab work drawn and they're a little bit anemic, they're going to blame it on the anemia.
Right.
But who knows?
There's well,
sure. There's a myriad of reasons why they're feeling tired.
Right. We're going to take a break here for just 1 second, and we will be back. Okay, we are back. Thanks for joining us. We're back to Ask the Doctor. We need some music with that.
We do.
Why don't you start singing?
Like the theme from like General Hospital
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
Oh, the theme from ER.
What about MASH?
Well, okay.
I'll see if I can dial that up for you. How's that?
Okay, we talked about supplements. We talked about nutrients. What about gluten?
Oh, here we go. Because I'm gluten intolerant.
Well, that's
and there
nice.
Are a few people that are gluten intolerant, and
or
even
celiac.
Fewer that are celiac, true celiac disease. And that
about
is
1% of the population.
Allergy to gluten.
So there are two types of the gluten compounds that people react to in terms of gluten allergies. Now, the gluten sensitivity is different than the gluten allergy. And there seems to be about 1% of the population that is celiac and 1% that is gluten intolerant. So it leaves about 98% of us that gluten does not cause any reaction to. And actually, if your body doesn't react to it, it's very health promoting because
yeah,
of the
I
bacteria.
I think it gets a bad rap because, you know, gluten is in every bread product. So bagels, donuts, Pop-Tarts, you know, that's all gluten. And I think, again, it's like a carb. You know,
right.
The good gluten gets bound up with the bad gluten. And people, when they go, quote, gluten-free and they feel better, it's probably because they're not eating all that other junk. They're
well,
not eating.
I don't know about that because gluten-free bread has more junk in it than any other bread I've ever seen.
Well, but if there's someone that's been eating pies and cupcakes and, you know, bagels and donuts and that sort of thing, and you step away from that, then yes, you may feel better because you're not consuming those products. What I'm finding, it's like when we wanted to go, I don't know if we were trying to get more fiber in our diets or what the whole promotion of fiber was, but every boxed mix or granola bar or even cookies or crackers, you know, had fiber added to them. They were all these high, you know, and then it was still a bunch of junk, you know.
Right.
It was high fiber apple muffin mix from, you know, Duncan Hines.
Well, that comes about because as a population, there's only 3% of us that
get enough fiber.
That minimum.
Yeah.
Not enough. Not what is optimal, but what is the minimum amount of fiber. 3% of the population gets the minimum amount of fiber. So that leaves 97% of the population that's fiber deficient by 50%. So that if average American male takes in 50% of what the minimum recommended intake of fiber is. And
but that I don't causes think it adding
a whole
it,
set of other problems.
I don't think adding it to all these boxed processed foods is the answer to getting more fiber in our diet.
It can be an answer because it is so needed.
Just eat some broccoli.
Well, there's not enough fiber in broccoli to do the trick. You need oatmeal or something that's got...
Now, okay, are you arguing with me about eating a Duncan Hines apple cinnamon fiber-fortified apple muffin versus broccoli?
I did not say anything about a cinnamon muffin.
Well, it's just said adding fiber to all these processed foods was not the answer.
And I said it could be an answer.
May not be the best answer, but it's a answer.
Well, I guess I'm not following that logic.
So if a guy's not going to eat broccoli.
Right.
I mean, there's some people that don't like it. You know, like then, George Bush.
Okay. You got to eat some fortified.
You got to eat some fortified fiber somehow. It's okay to take fortified fiber.
It's okay to take some psyllium husk.
That's fortified fiber or...
Fiber One bar.
But I still don't think the Fiber One bars that come with loads of sugar attached to them are going to be...
all that great.
Yeah, that are going to be great. I mean, I think it's just everything now has something added to it. It's either got fiber added to it.
It's got fiber and protein
added to it. I mean, you got gummies that have fiber, gummies that have added protein. I mean, it's crazy to me how we can't just eat the food that contains that.
Well, you're right. We have a hard time in this country eating food that's not processed.
And people gravitate toward the signs and the marketing and every commercial we see on TV that's going to, you know, eat this food that's got twice the fiber and twice the protein added to it.
And that's a marketing ploy, too. But that doesn't
come, you know, it's kind of like eating animal protein. You don't just get the animal protein. You get
the package.
You get the package. And when you eat all these processed foods, it's not just the extra fiber or the extra protein that you're getting, but it's usually bound up with however, you know, grams of sugar.
What I'm talking about more than anything is... too frequently I talk to people that are eating whole food plant-based and their cholesterol is, say, 190. And they're frustrated because they can't get their cholesterol down, but they're not doing anything to get that cholesterol down other than eating whole food plant-based. Those people need added fiber, however they get it. If it's a powder or whatever, because that's going to help suck the cholesterol out. And so just eating whole food plant-based, some people still need extra help to get the cholesterol in the level that needs to be under 150. So you want to do whatever you have to get your cholesterol under 150. And if that's taking packages of fiber supplements, then so be it.
Yes, I agree to a certain extent, but I'm not gonna. I do think things like extra fiber, like Benefiber or psyllium husk, or eating oats with the beta glucan.
Now, when we say psyllium husk, we're not talking about Meta. That is processed crap. Well, I just want to.
I know, but that's what I'm talking about, eating a bunch of processed foods that have extra fiber added to it.
But, I mean, the psyllium husk is okay add.
Yes, no, I agree with that.
The oat fiber
in
its processed form is okay to add.
But it doesn't have sugar added to it.
Well, correct.
So that's what I'm trying to get across. That there's no... that trying to get fiber in other ways, that like drinkable, where you can get a lot of it down in one, you know, one swoop so that... you get through it. yeah, having those added fibers are, well, they're great for getting your cholesterol down and keeping you full longer.
Right.
Okay. How come I have not heard about this way of eating from my doctor?
Because your doctor is not educated in it. Nutrition education for medical doctors is horribly deficient in this country. And I don't see any signs that it's going to change anytime soon. As doctors, we are taught how to treat symptoms and how to use surgery to heal people. But we're really not taught how to treat the cause. That's why I'm hopeful with the new lifestyle medicine organization, where their motto is treat the cause, not the symptom, that there'll be some headway made. But most physicians, because they realize that they're ignorant in nutrition, they're not going to offer any real nutritional advice to their patients.
Well, I think most of them offer whatever nutritional advice based on what they're doing, just from what they're doing or their own personal results of it.
That or what they've been told by a rep that, you know, unfortunately, doctors know less about nutrition than the general public, which I think is a horrible statement, but it's true.
And so it's easy for them to follow the American Heart Association or some...
Right. American Cancer.
Yeah.
You know.
Low sodium or some heart just healthy.
Some type of placating advice that really doesn't get to the core of the problem.
What's funny is when you go in a hospital and you see a patient and they're on a heart healthy diet, and I'm like, what's the difference in that and the unheart healthy diet?
A little bit lower sodium, I think.
I mean,
but nothing to do with the
but
fat.
They're giving you Mrs. Dash instead of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's usually the recommendation is cut back on your salt.
Salt, right.
Well, for high blood pressure. Yeah. That's the only recommendation I was ever told. And, you know, the majority of doctors probably have very little connection between food and high blood pressure.
Well, it's just, I mean, it's like the diabetes. Just
you're right.
Watch your sugar. Don't do anything to cure your disease. Just watch the sugar.
What cracks me up is when people, I'm just pre-diabetic.
Yeah.
I go, okay, all right. Yeah. Did they tell you what that was?
Or they'll say, well, I used to be diabetic.
Yeah.
But I'm taking medication.
That's right.
Now I'm no longer diabetic.
Yeah.
Well, if you stop that medication, what's your blood sugar going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and what happens a lot of times is even on that medication, the diabetes starts getting worse, and pretty soon that medicine doesn't
work. Well, yeah, and then they have to add insulin.
And,
you know, it's pretty telling because exercise is better treatment for diabetes, type 2 diabetes, than metformin. But you don't see very many doctors writing a prescription to
exercise
30 minutes a day or an hour a day.
And don't you think it's because that exercise is... helping to burn the fat in the cells?
Yes.
And, you know, when you hear the word exercise, it's just too much. I'm like, how about if you just get up and walk down the block?
Right. Walking is the best exercise there is.
You know, just get up and get moving.
I mean, most people can walk.
Sure.
And, you know, when they're talking about exercise, they're not talking about going to the gym and, you know,
CrossFit.
Doing CrossFit or, you know, that... spin class where you're at close to 90% of your maximum heart rate. You're talking about being able to exercise and carry on a conversation. And
just
that is very, very healthy.
I agree.
What else do you...
Okay, one last thing before we finish up here. I don't eat sugar, which I get this a lot. Oh, I don't ever eat sugar. But they are consuming things like stevia and other non-sugar, I guess. Yeah. I don't know how to really classify this because you'll see all the time ads that say no sugar added. But when you read the ingredients, there's all kinds of other junk in there to make it sweet. And sometimes it's stevia, and sometimes
it's not sugar, though.
But it's not sugar, you know. And so I find that all the time people tell me, oh, I don't eat sugar. You know,
we gave you high fructose corn syrup, but it wasn't sugar.
And so, you know, is that okay? What's the deal? Should we have, you know.
I don't think any sweetener is okay. None of the very few of the non-caloric sweeteners are not very, I mean, very few of them are less harmful. They're very harmful to your body.
I think in just probably different ways, but it's still the same, but they still are not good for you and can still cause harm.
They can cause a lot of harm. They can produce, you know, chemicals due to their metabolism that is dangerous to people. Most of the artificial sweeteners are very toxic to your intestinal bacteria. And plus, they also keep your sweet tooth.
Well, they keep your sweet tooth, and then, but they also trick your body into thinking you're getting calories when you're not.
Which can lead to weight gain
because
your body
you're going to eat more.
Tastes sweet, tells your brain sugar's coming in. Your brain tells your pancreas to pump out some insulin. And then you don't get the extra calories because it's non-caloric. Well, then that causes hypoglycemia, which is going to spur you to overeat. Mm-hmm. So,
That's
just crazy. You're talking, I was a sugar-holic at one point in time in my life where, you know, it wasn't just a little bit of sugar. It was tons of it that I added to coffee, to tea. And I found that I went to a flavored green or white tea as my drink of choice to get off my sugar habit. And then quickly, well, not that quickly, but gradually over a few years period of time, I went to where primarily I drink water.
Yeah, I drink my cup of coffee in the morning, and then I drink water the rest of the day. And occasionally I'll drink a carbonated water. I do like sparkling water and some of the flavored, like, you know, sparkling waters that just have lemon or lime, but no sweeteners of any kind. And it's so deceiving because you read labels all the time, even on waters, and it'll say, you know, just flavored waters, quote, no sugar added. And they all have that some kind of erythritol or stevia or whatever.
Topo Chico.
I know. Just any little Pellegrino or any of those. But still, it's just.
Well, and I tell people all the time.
Labels
that's
are crazy.
That's a great way to get off soda, I think.
Mm-hmm,
because
sparkling water.
So oftentimes we want those bubbles. We want that carbonation. Mm-hmm. And sparkling water, I think, is great.
Yeah.
Or Perrier or Pellegrino or any of those, you know. Perrier. Yeah.
Perrier.
Yeah. We went to a restaurant. I ordered. I said, "Do you have any sparkling water like Pellegrino?" She goes, "No, but we've got that that Perrier."
Shoot, yeah, you do.
I said, "Oh, I'll take some
that.
Of that." Yeah. That was funny. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. If you are interested in our seminars like we were talking about earlier, we're at plantbasedokc.com. And under wellness events, you can see where we're going to be and what you need to do to attend one of our events, whether you need a reservation or whatever. So please check out our website. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram under Plant-Based OKC, all one word. And I share all my goodies I'm cooking and making, and my Easter dinner I posted on there. I made my version of Easter Reese's peanut butter Easter eggs. Sorry, Randy,
I noticed there weren't any here.
And they were made with dates and peanut butter and some vanilla, and so they were so...
Oh, they were really good.
Oh, I bet they were. Obviously they were, because there's none here.
So...
A health forum on May 6th?
Monday, May 6th, we'll be at Rococo, so call Rococo North Park Mall to get a reservation for that meeting.
What about our seminar?
For our seminar, you go to plantbasedokc.com, and there's a link to sign up for a reservation for a seat at one of those as well. So we're going to leave you with that. And as Kathy would say, live life on purpose and with purpose.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.